A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
For a good long while after the full-time whistle in Cape Town on Saturday, Graham Rowntree sat in the coach's box with his head in his hands trying to process his emotions after leading Munster to their first trophy in 12 years, even as all of his backroom team jumped around the place like madmen. Down on the pitch, Stormers captain Stephen Kitsoff had his head in his hands trying to figure out how his team had lost a game they deserved to lose but very nearly won. And a few metres away, Munster captain Peter O'Mahony had his head in his hands as he stood beside the potty-mouthed match winner, John Hodnett, during the post-match interviews. That's right, John Hodnett besmirched the good name of the DHL Derby by dropping an F-bomb. Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Hey, everyone.
It left a sour taste in the mouth, though, didn't it?
Hey, Ken, not sure everyone heard you there.
Hey, Owen, how are you?
No, I'm pretty good, Ken. I'm pretty good. This was the moment that had Peter O'Mahony covering his face in shame.
Player of the match, the final. Very well done. Very well played. A great win for you guys, no doubt.
Yeah, look, fuck it. Some win, in fairness, like, you know, we've had it tough there the last few weeks. We've been on the road.
It's just, honestly, I feel like I have a sixth sense for this because I've watched so many minor and under 20 games on TG Carr. Where like it's literally 50% of, you know, 19-year-old just finishes unbelievable win, Micheál O'Donnell. So how are you feeling? Fucking great. Like, you know, you can just see it in their eyes. They're just definitely going to...
Hodnett was one of those. Well, Peter O'Mahony didn't call it.
No, Peter O'Mahony
was shocked.
I had no idea. I just thought that, you know, among the professional ranks, you know, this sort of thing just doesn't happen, you know? That when you're dealing with... professional athletes in a high performance environment, Owen.
Yeah.
And we all have a lot to learn from high performance environments, such as Munster Rugby's. I just didn't think it was going to happen, but there it was. And if it's going to happen, it's always going to happen after the first question, right out of the gate.
The O'Mahony reaction was what made it, though, which you obviously can't see in this particular medium. But his hands go up to his face. Oh, no. Then he realizes his own reaction is on camera, so he does that thing where you pretend you're just, like, I'm just rubbing my face here. Yeah. Hoping there's no more cursing.
And also, who cares?
Who cares? He deserved to say whatever he wanted after scoring the try that landed the URC title for Munster.
5 minutes remaining, back with Archie Snyman, moves it into Tyke Byrne. Munster come forward, Casey moves it away. A chance here now, the ball has moved across far side of the pitch, moved in. John Hodnett, Hodnett for the corner!
Michael Corcoran doing a cracking job as always on RT Radio, and what an amazing try it was, the call side plus the touchline conversion to follow, which made a huge difference because that pushes it out from a drop goal or a penalty to a try and basically wins it for Munster.
Yeah, and it was funny because they started the game so badly. I mean, right from the start, Stephen Archer, silly penalty, then Frisch throws the intercept pass to Libbock, and you're kind of thinking away from home that might knock the stuffing out of a team. And it kind of, I felt like, oh no, Libbock's actually going to play well now because he's a confidence player. He's just scored a try in front of his fans and they looked relaxed. But they responded really well to that, as they did to setbacks all day. You think even of, say, the Peter O'Mahony pass that was deemed forward to Haley for the try. And then a couple of minutes later, they're scoring a try with Calvin Nash. And that was kind of the theme of the thing mentally from Munster. But I was kind of thinking about, and we touched on this in the last few weeks, and it, this has happened very suddenly, obviously, but we've got new coaches, new culture, kind of a very new game plan. So what Rowntree, Prendergast, Leamy and the rest of them have done in a short period of time is fairly remarkable. And you'd have to say this season, the message kind of hammered home about the importance of coaching in rugby. And kind of the further we get into pro rugby, the more I feel like coaching matters and the more of a team game it is. Like, you pick your style, you pick your coaches, then you pick your style, and then you work around that with the players and the players believe in it. But if you take that final Hodnett try, right, 14 players touch the ball. So basically your whole team touched the ball. That's 14 players buying into the game plan, understanding their role in it, understanding how their role impacts everybody else, then executing that skill under pressure at the right
trying
time.
Trying things even as well. There are little loop plays, forwards getting involved in loop plays, all the kind of
an
stuff
offload,
a modern rugby team needs. Yeah, it wasn't just like, I'll shovel it onto you, we'll try to make a yard and see what happens. They knew they had to make something happen.
Yeah, and I love that Daly at the very end is immediately passing back inside. How often do you see a winger towards the end when you need the score kind of going for something that isn't on and gets knocked into touch? He was immediately thinking, get it back inside, because that's both a percentages play in that it keeps the ball in play, but it's also like adding a different new angle for the Stormers defence to deal with. And Hodnett was so good all day. Like, he's phenomenally good. Yeah. He doesn't look like a kind of modern brilliant rugby player. Doesn't have like the square jaw, doesn't have massive biceps, but is just hard as nails and really consistent. He's been one of their best players all season. But just the thought that all those 14 players got that right in the build-up, and there's something about winning something and then the way you win it, you know, to create something at the end, same as they did against Leinster. And it's not just a small thing they create. It's like several phases of brilliant, skillful rugby and then amazing execution at the end with the try, with the drop goal for Crowley and then the conversion from Crowley.
Bear in mind, they had a number of tries disallowed in one case, probably controversially as well. So that's, they did have to keep going. They did have adversity in the game. They have had a lot of it over the last few weeks as well. And they were making a big play about the fact that because they've had to travel, because they haven't really been able to refresh the squad, they've sort of been forced into a corner where they've just had to had to back themselves in what they're doing. And maybe it's focused everybody's mind because the players keep talking about this plan that's been there from the start of the season, but it's taken longer for them to take it all on board. And just this intense period where they've ended up winning the right to play all these games away from home, tough crowds, all that kind of stuff, seems to have benefited them massively.
Yeah, I mean, like a few weeks ago, they lose heavily at home to Glasgow. We're thinking back to the start of the season when they lost 5 from 7, I think it was, including to, who was it, the Dragons and Connacht and Cardiff and all sorts. And then,
did Peter O'Mahony have his wedding at the wrong time? Was that one of the weird storylines early on in the season?
So they're, in our minds, in my mind, they're probably out of the Champions Cup. They're out of the running really for the URC. Keith Earls is retired. Orgie Snyman will maybe never have an impactful few minutes for Munster. And then cut to a few weeks later, they're roaring their heads off in Cape Town. Keith Earls finally gets the trophy to add to his once from the very start of his career. Orgie Snyman, he got his first injury in 2020, August 2020. So we're coming up on 3 years, gets an ACL, re-ruptures the ACL, has several setbacks, then finally gets back this season, gets 2 concussions in a row, gets benched again. And then finally, so O'Mahony goes off and he comes on, and then just weirdly, like, he finally is fit and in form for the most important 40-50 minutes of the season and plays really well.
It's good. That was some good timing. That was some good timing.
Rory O'Connor was in Cape Town. We're going to talk to him and an extremely happy Barry Murphy, ex-Munster player, on the podcast today. Limerick and Cork men and women brought together by Munster's victory, Murph, on Saturday, only to be driven apart a day later as the two counties.
We're going to talk to Barry about the hurling.
In the Munster Hurling Championship.
He was there.
What was he?
Yeah, he was there. I mean, he was there in a professional capacity.
Oh yeah,
they were playing music beforehand. So I mean, and he did appear to be quite impressed by what he saw.
Let's double job for Barry.
I mean, this is what we need. We need to consolidate. We should just talk to like 3 guests, but have them cover like a multitude of sports every week. And if Barry Murphy's one of those, I'm down with that. I can dig that on. Nicky English described the game that Barry Murphy will be talking to us about
in detail
in just a few minutes as good a hurling game as I've ever seen.
What?
Nicky English has seen a fair few hurling games.
Not a man given necessarily to overstating the odds either.
No, it was unbelievable. And it was only the second half of a ridiculous day of hurling on. I mean, I was all set to go to Galway Dublin, and then kind of lit on last week. I was like, I'm going to miss Cork Limerick. It's going to be amazing. Maybe I should just stay home. This was a decision that paid off, I have to say, handsomely in my favour on. Because, I mean, it was literally only at like a minute to four when the Cork Limerick game was about to throw in that I was like, God, I'm wrecked already. I've already seen a lot. It seems like I've felt a lot of things in today's hurling. And the main event is literally just about to start. And I need to get my head around the fact that Limerick could be out of the championship in like 95 minutes time or whatever. And
They nearly were.
Yeah, because like Wexford, watching Jackie Tyrrell watch Wexford Kilkenny was in itself quite entertaining, given that none of the rest of us could watch it.
So that's how it was on RT, was it?
Yeah, RT kind of screwed it. Yeah, I mean, they showed Galway Dublin. And I mean, 2 weeks ago, that was absolutely the right decision to make. But the second Westmeath beat Wexford last week, I mean, let's go. It's time to show Wexford Kilkenny. A, because it's always a really good game. And B, because Wexford could be in the Joe McDonagh Cup if results go as expected. As it turns out, that game wasn't even on GAA Go, so...
There's options besides RT, is there?
There is a much maligned streaming service, yes, that was not utilised to show Wexford Kilkenny yesterday for whatever reason, which was very frustrating.
That's a pity. Wexford managed to concede 5 goals and still avoid relegation.
Yeah,
win the game.
4-23 to 5-18. But listen, the highlights will do. It's fine. No one really cares. So, yeah, I mean, it was. Galway Dublin was like a bit of a... Well, it was... Galway were terrible for long patches, but the Wexford game was just bubbling along in the background, and the goals flying in at Mullingar, and then the Munster Championship starts, and then Waterford are hammering the shit out of Tipperary. Like, it was unbelievable. I mean, I did think at around 5:30, while I was watching Cork and Limerick, Cork thundering back into it, 7 down at one stage, got it back to 1 down with a couple of minutes of ordinary time to go. I'm also watching Dublin Roscommon on GAA Go, and the Rossies are about to beat Dublin in Croke Park. I'm like, okay, well, this is it. This is the greatest day in the history of the GAA. It literally doesn't get any better than this. I feel like maybe that was an overly emotional response, but nevertheless, it feels like we should talk some GAA on the World Service on. I know that we're going to do that.
Well, after the Barry Murphy hurling analysis today that you've talked us into, we will, of course, talk to Jamie and Malachy tomorrow, Jamie Wall and Malachy Clerk. And our World Service members will vouch for the consistent excellence of these two together, yes. By the way. They're amazing, amazing analysts. The rest of you will need to sign up on secondcaptains.com for £5 a month plus VAT to hear that one. Later in this podcast, we're going to tell you about a brilliant Kevin Moran documentary you should be watching on RT TV tonight. That's after the rugby.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
England have been absolutely ripped to shreds.
Here comes Rob Herring with the line of throw for Ireland on the England 10-metre line, far side. The ball is swept back. Here comes Keith Earls, gathers it now. Races inside the 22-metre line. Goes for the corner. Earls, far side of the pitch. Looks to touch it down. In for the try. Far side of the pitch. 22 minutes gone. Keith Earls with the try. Flown over the tail end of the line-out. Across on the far side. Liveliest man in the entire place was the Ireland fella on the wing. His name is Keith Earls.
I've been telling you how good you are. Now I want you to try to tell me how you are.
Rory O'Connor was in Cape Town to witness Munster landing the URC title for the Independent. Not a bad one to be at, Rory.
No, one of the better ones, all right, Owen. Just back. Pretty special weekend, all told. Cape Town is one of the great cities to visit on this beat. And it was a bit of a surprise end to the season. I think most people had penciled in the Aviva for a Leinster home home final. I don't need the Munster fans to be too insulted by that. And to be honest, it's a great way to finish the season, to see this Munster team, some of those players come from where they've come from, with, you know, 2,000 fans having booked that trip at short notice. It was pretty amazing stuff. And a weekend that'll live long in the memory.
Barry Murphy wasn't in Cape Town, but was at the Gaelic grounds to watch Limerick beat Cork. Not a bad sporting weekend for you, Barry.
I know. I was wondering if you wanted me to come on here and talk about the Limerick hurlers.
Well, Murph does. Murph demands some hurling analysis. Well, so how was that for you?
I wouldn't have a notion. To be honest with you, I've never played any GAA growing up, so eye-opening to me when I go to it, but it was an unbelievable occasion and a pleasure to play at. But the buzz in Limerick after Saturday night, that win, and then the win from the hurlers yesterday, we haven't seen. You know, I think from a rugby perspective, obviously, it's something we've been missing for so long. And there was a serious explosion of emotion and happiness around the city. I was at an event in the Castroy Park Hotel, a UL Bohemians 100-year centenary event, and it was like men, women, children crying.
Really?
It was incredible. So it meant a lot. And I think the manner in which they did as well. But I've literally just left. Craig Casey lives three doors up from me, so I've just left his back garden. And they're fresh off the plane. Fresh, sorry, isn't the word I'd use for them. They're pretty loose, I'll be honest. And Gavin Coombs asked me to mention Le Bloc, he's calling it now, when he blocked down Libox's kick 5 minutes ago. So special mention to Gavin. He's taking all the praise.
I'm sorry, Barry, you were partying with the winning team and you've left that to come talk to us in the podcast. That's dedication.
I know. Well, I do have to go and mind my kids now as well. So, but I tore myself away from it because they're having some crack. But I'm going to the homecoming tonight in Thomond Park. I think I'm doing a bit of emceeing.
Oh, are you?
State,
so. Ah, very good. Very good.
Plenty more crack to be had, lads. Don't worry.
Yeah. I mean, what's the overriding emotion, if there is any, among the current players, do you think?
They're just so happy. I mean, this is all the young lads. So there was a shout out to the 12 disciples. I was calling them the 12 crack disciples. So let's see. It was the two Witcherleys, Paddy Patterson, Ben Healy, Alex Kendellan, Jack Crowley, Craig Casey, Jeremy Lockman, John Hodnett, Gavin Coombs, Liam Coombs. So there was a lot of the young fellas, given out about the old fellas who were, I think Conor Murray's already gone to Portugal for his wedding, and Peter O'Mahony's given out that he doesn't want to go to any of the, and Earl Z, I think he's weirded out by a lot of these young fellas. they're buzzing, lads. They're absolutely thrilled. They're all wearing their retro Munster jerseys that they all had when they were kids out in the garden. So it's gas. Like, they're buzzing.
Rory, I mentioned Graham Rowntree's reaction, if we can start there, maybe, because it was interesting to watch it in the coach's box, head in his hands for a long time, as all the other, even Dennis Leamy and the likes, dancing around practically in jubilation. He just sort of had the head in his hands, trying to take it all in. Did he explain afterwards what that was all about?
Yeah, I think there's a personal element to it in terms of where he's come from. And, you know, when he came to Munster, it was off the back of being a Georgia coach, you know, following on from having been let go by England after the 2015 World Cup. And he came to Munster as an assistant to Van Graan and was there for a couple of years where they knocked on the door but never really got close. And then when Van Graan left and you know, having initially signed a two-year extension, he put his name forward and was made to wait for that job for a long time. You know, they sounded out a couple of options across the world. You know, it's fair enough to say that he wasn't their first choice. But he waited and he waited and he considered pulling out, but he waited and eventually the job came to him. And they had a disastrous start to the season and put themselves massively behind the eight ball and they got criticism. I don't think anyone ever called for his head or anything like that. I think everyone has understood that there was a process and that they were trying to change things, but it was kind of happening slower than everyone expected. But I'm sure it was a dark enough place to be. I mean, he's bought fully into the whole Munster thing. You know, I think he's embraced living in Munster and loves life down there. He's really he's really kind of stuck into it and really embraced the community element of it. I think he really loves living down in Limerick, and I think or Clare, I think he lives in. And I think like that all weighed on him when things were going badly and the criticism was coming and the team weren't performing and all the changes they made weren't coming to fruition, obviously, on the pitch, but were in training, and they had to stay patient and stick with it. And I think that all came out. And he also spoke then about the people Munster have lost in the 12 years since they've lost, they last won a trophy. And, you know, Anthony Foley, Brian O'Brien, Tom Tierney only this year, Paul Derbyshire, Barry, I've probably missed one or two there. Like, it's been a very tragic period for Munster in many ways, and the stuff that's happened off the pitch with those people passing ways, you know, Pat Gerrity's another one that I left out there, has arguably affected everyone more, or probably has. Yeah, it's obviously more important stuff than what happens on a rugby pitch, but also the pain of maybe feeling obliged to try and deliver something to Peter O'Mahony, Keith Earls, Conor Murray and Stephen Archer before they retire, you know, because players have come and gone without winning anything for Munster, and O'Mahony has spoken of his fear. And I think all that fed into Rowntree's, you know, state of emotion at the end of the game and also just the way they've gone and done it. You know, from being in a hole 6-7 weeks ago, you know, facing down, staring on the barrel of a season in the Challenge Cup, to going away from home 6 weeks in a row, winning a quarterfinal in Glasgow, a semi-final in Leinster, and a final in Cape Town. It's the stuff of books, you know, like or movies, you know, it's a fairy tale for them, really. And I think it all poured out in that moment.
Yeah, and the way they won this particular game, Barry, I mean, we talked to you a couple of weeks ago after the late drop goal to beat Leinster. In this case, they pulled out a late try and the touchline conversion. We were making the point earlier, just whatever about carving out an opportunity for a drop goal, you don't have to be overly ambitious in your play to do that, but to get over the line against South African defence in that sort of a situation and to use the ingenuity of the player. I think, did you say every player touched the ball?
14 of 15.
14 players touched the ball in those phases. That must have had you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, I think the boys were slagging Roman Salanoa there that he was the only one that didn't touch the ball. But yeah, I mean, actually Jack Crowley told me there that they thought there was advantage being played at the time. That's why they were flinging it around the place.
Oh, right.
But it wasn't. Which is hilarious. But I mean, that's the way they've been playing, you know, all game and all season, really. Yeah. It was just move the ball and move those big teams around. I mean, they're a massive side, the Stormers, and the boys did confirm that there, and the hits they were putting in were huge. So I think LeBlanc started it off, and then it was just, yeah, try and move around, try and score, and to get every player to get their hands on the ball. And I think Earls, he touched it a few times and made it one big carry that kind of broke a few tackles. And Niall Scannell had a few big ones. And then, yeah, brilliant pass in the end. I think it was Mike Haley to Daly. And then John Hodnett to score in the corner. But, yeah, I mean, their intent from the get-go was to play rugby, wasn't it, yesterday? It was just, you know, the pitch had obviously cut up a little bit, but I don't think it was as bad. The lads were saying that maybe for stepping, it was a little bit tough underneath particularly their back three might have struggled. But I just think I was so blown away by their approach to it, and they're probably a little bit unlucky. Rory, I'm sure you might know a little bit more, but I wasn't sure about the Gavin Coombs try, whether that was... they could have had an argument there that try was disallowed. He seemed to think it was a try, but they got a little bit of a rub. The run of the green went against them a few times, but they certainly make it exciting, don't they? Because I was losing my mind at the end of that. I really thought once they'd kind of gone into that 70-71 minute, the Stormers are picking up a head of steam, weren't they? Similar to what Leinster had done a few weeks ago. But that just shows the belief that side, and that's what Rowntree keeps using, that word, isn't it? Belief. And it was absolutely thrilling finish to it.
Yeah, Rory, just thinking about, you know, say the likes of La Rochelle, who sign players from around the world and build it that way, or Leinster essentially using their academy and building over years and knowing what's coming through. And then what Rowntree, Leamy, Prendergast and the rest of them have done in one season is with essentially the same set of players as Van Raan had. And when you look at, like, I think you touched on as well, the likes of Nash and Klein and those, they almost feel like new signings. They're playing so differently under this new coaching group. And even they say turning around like Fekitoa's season, mid-season, they didn't discard him. They worked on him and he was brilliant by the final. And I think it's extra impressive when this happens in football sometimes too, when a player or coach doesn't get to sign new players, just works with what he has and transforms them.
Absolutely. And I think he could turn it on its head and really admire what Fekitoa has done as well, because halfway through the season, when things hadn't gone well from at the start, you know, he could have easily stacked it in when Munster said, look, we're not taking up the second year on your contract, and he signed for Benetton, and he could have easily gone, right, I'm just going to take the money and leave. He's been brilliant. You know, ever since the Toulouse away game, when he got back into the Champions Cup team, he's been a real driving force for this Munster team. Him and Frisch were the two players they signed last summer. They've made a big impact. Like, they do have a very good squad. They don't have the depth that a Leinster do in terms of, you know, being able to rotate their entire team fully. But what they've actually done here is their 23 has been really, really strong. They've had a bit of luck with regards to fitness, but also Graham Rowntree has challenged them. You know, he dropped Conor Murray for a Champions Cup game. He left Keith Earls on the bench for one as well. There was some talk he was going to drop O'Mahony at one stage as well. He basically said to the internationals, it doesn't matter what you do up there in Carton House. When you come down here, you've got to train as well as these guys, because these guys are training really well. And he's delayed selection until much later in the week, so the training is competitive. And I think that's driven performance. But also, they don't have a skills coach. They're bringing in Mossy Lawler this year. But I think the work that Leamy and Prendergast and Andy Kiriakou have done underneath Rowntree, three smart hires, they've really driven the skills. And John Klein, I think, is the epitome of that. I mean, John Klein's big weakness over the last couple of years, the reason he's never been picked for Ireland again after being controversially included in the World Cup squad 4 years ago, is his skills. That he would knock the ball on routinely. He'd try passes and they wouldn't work. That he just really wasn't able to play that kind of modern, kind of tip on passes style that Ireland adopted, you know, a couple of years ago, and Munster have taken on this year. Well, this year he's become one of the best skilled players in the tournament, and like, he's been probably Munster's player of the year this year, playing a game that no one believed he could play. I don't think anyone ever trusted him to do it before. I don't think anyone pushed him to do it before. I think they all said, you just do you do you. You go hit rucks and maul and scrummage, and that's your job. But now they've challenged him to do more, and he's become a much better player. And I don't know if he's going to get into the Ireland squad that's being named tomorrow for the World Cup, the 45-man training squad, but he's certainly in the mix, because he brings an awful lot of the skill sets that Ireland need. And that's a tribute to the coaching that's gone on in Munster this year through probably Prendergast largely, but also Leamy, Kiriakou and Rowntree as well. So it's, you know, it's been a slow burn. It didn't all happen overnight. There was a couple of really rough days along the way at the start, but by sticking with it and the players sticking with the coaches as well, it's you know, you can see the reaction to being dropped. People stay with them the whole way. That there was no one went to the beach early this year. Even Ben Healy signed for Edinburgh, declared for Scotland. He was on the pitch driving things in that last couple of minutes as well. You know, that's a testament, I think, to the management and people buying into the team culture.
Yeah, just of all the things that improved, say like maul defence transformed, ruck efficiency totally transformed. But of all the things they've done this season, Barry, I feel like the alignment and the bravery in attack is the one that's so noticeably different. And when you see how Racing 92 played under Prendergast, and the fact that Prendergast has now come in and changed that philosophy, we were talking earlier about the fact that they're now the number one offloading team in the league, with the highest offloading efficiency as well. Like, that is an absolute sea change in the space of one season. I just feel like Prendergast, those other things, like, you know, stoic defence, you can maybe get through just culture, but that technical and then tactical bravery is really what's changed Munster's season.
Yeah, absolutely. It is bravery, isn't it? It's I suppose they've got such a lovely blend with Rowntree coming in and the experience he has. He seems to bring that calmness and the freedom to play. And he would have brought in Prendy and said, Prendy, what do you want to do? And Prendy, as he said, takes his experience in Racing and applies that. But like, Prendy is Limerick rugby born and bred. Like, he was a brilliant Gaelic footballer, brilliant rugby player, brilliant hurler, like one of the most skillful players I've ever played with and worked with. He literally used to teach me how to kick the variety of different kicks that he could. He could, one of these fellas who could throw the ball behind his back halfway across the pitch. So he's incredibly skillful, puts a lot of emphasis on that. And then you've Leams, who, exact same, goal kicker for Rockwell when he was senior cup as the number eight, incredible hands, and then incredible knowledge and skill at the breakdown defensively. And obviously, if you want to create fast ball and play that kind of style, the breakdown has to be really sharp. So that combination, Aaron, Andy Kiriakou as well, great fella to have around. But he was brilliant involved when he was involved in Munster when I played. Just a great fella. He's gone away and gotten an awful lot of experience as well, coaching elsewhere. So they have put together a really competent coaching ticket. And then it's just the belief. Like players, I used to watch Shane Daly. I remember watching Shane Daly and Calvin Nash when they played Senior Cup. I was coaching Castroy College a few years ago. Those two boys are coming. And I was like, these guys are ripping it up, like offloading, brilliant skills. And then they went into a Munster system where that was bait out of them. It was like, no, we don't do that now. And you heard Shane Daly come out at the start of this season and he was sick of just chasing kicks for the last 3 or 4 years. So how do you develop your skills when you're playing like that? Yeah. It's and that's what we've been dealing with down in Munster. Like this is a, you know, how strong rugby is in Limerick in particular. Like fans have been completely disillusioned to how that Munster team have been coached over the last 5 years. And now what you got to see over the last few months and finally come to fruition was the ability to play, the confidence to play. I mean, how many times I think we kicked the ball 35, 36 times yesterday, but it was how we kicked the ball. Beautiful cross field from Crowley, beautiful chip from Mike Haley, incredible box kicks from Connor Murray that I'd say we won 90% of.
And he was very good. Oh my God, yeah, he was very good. He's such a good player to have in the final, isn't he? So calm.
Unbelievable. Yeah, his defense, he had a couple of little sniping breaks as well. You could hear him barking at the players to get on their feet a couple of times. I mean, such a leader and how much... you know, fresh life has been bred into Conor Murray over the last few months, possibly when he got the drop that time before Christmas, Paddy Patterson playing so well. But yeah, I mean, delighted for Conor and for Peter, but also lads, the likes of Niall O'Donovan, like manager of Munster for the last 10 years, he's a guy who hasn't won a trophy with Munster. Niall won four All-Irelands with Shannon back in the 90s as coach, on to coach that early Munster team with Declan Kidney, didn't win a trophy then went on to Ireland with Eddie O'Sullivan and came back to Munster. And I mean, the years that Niall has put into that side and then also all the backroom staff, Fiona Murphy, the media manager, the physios that got Orgie Snyman back. I mean, what that means to them as well, like to have gone through this drought, those tough times is huge. So big shout out to those guys as well.
Sport is all about timing, Rory, in a lot of ways. Is Jack Crowley timing this kind of emergence perfectly with the World Cup in mind? I mean, we saw this in the context of Ross Byrne's woes last weekend. He nails his touchline conversion. Maybe he wasn't perfect all game, but he stepped up again in a really big moment and did what he had to do. Is there a fairly clear scenario where you could see Jack Crowley as the man who will possibly have to steer us home in a World Cup quarterfinal if Johnny Sexton's not on the pitch?
He's got a lot of momentum, doesn't he? And I think, you know, if you think Andy Farrell values big moments and like that kick that Ross Byrne put over against Australia back in November, how much, you know, that propelled him onto the scene for the Six Nations. Well, yeah, Crowley's going to be arriving at the camp in a couple of weeks' time, just full of confidence, full of momentum. Like, they already like him. They already, I think there's an intangible to Crowley in that he, you know, he has that Sexton-esque, and Byrne has this to a degree as well, where he sees the bigger picture. It's not just a skill set. It's also a mindset. It's an ability to see, to play the game kind of a couple of phases ahead. And that's probably what's getting him ahead of Joey Carberry at the moment, because Carberry just never really seemed to be able to develop that side of things. He obviously was fleet of foot and well able to make a break, but whether he was able to, you know, that kind of thing we all say, talk about, control a game, Crowley definitely has that. To do it against Leinster 2 weeks ago, and again, to back it up on Saturday the way he did up against Libbock, who's one of the highest rated tens in the game. You know, he didn't play particularly well, Libbock, on the day, but that even again stands to Crowley that, you know, he was the one who handled the final better. You know, this is the biggest game of his career by a good distance, and he ran the show. He was really, really impressive, took the right option most of the time. And he's definitely going to be named in this squad. He comes in, I think the only thing that's holding him back is a lack of international experience. You know, there's three warm-up games. There's two games before the big stuff starts. There's a real chance for him to be wearing that number 22 shirt. I guess the big question, and it's a bit of a hypothetical, is if Sexton goes down, who do you trust to start the big game for Ireland at the World Cup? But, you know, the argument is getting harder to make that it's not going to be Crowley. He looks the part. And one of the simplest endorsements he can ever get for Crowley is that O'Gara tried to sign him 2 years ago before he even really made a mark at senior level. Look, we all know how smart and how sharp O'Gara is and how well he knows the number 10 position. You know, it took Fangraan a while to kind of to cop that this guy was the real deal, but O'Gara saw it before him, and I think he was right. You know, his judgment will be proven in time. And yeah, I see like three caps, is that enough to be kind of running the show at World Cups? It looks like it's less and less of an issue because of this run through the knockouts. It's really going to stand to him.
Yeah, and I think the lineup behind Sexton has changed rapidly and will continue to, like, if what was Ross Byrne's sixth or seventh choice in the country and then goes back up to, well, second place, first place with Sexton injured. And I think it's going to change again. And Crowley, as you say, has all the momentum. I think Hodnett should probably get into an extended squad now. And Daly and Nash, I know we touched on them and we were talking earlier just about the way Shane Daly, and the second he got the pass on the wing, that so many wingers tried to score that try, but was straight back into Hodnett, which I love to see because it shows just how in the moment he was and not scrambling and not trying too hard and not overplaying your hand. But what about Daly and Nash into an extended squad as well?
I think they both have a really good chance. And you think about the players they're up against, you're talking about Stockdale and Larmer. Larmer wasn't getting picked for the big Leinster games at the end of the season. And Stockdale, you know, his season ended a month ago and he didn't do an awful lot this year. So if Andy Farrell's backing on form, he's had those guys in squads all year. But there's a group of players here at Munster who are just on a run, who are playing really well. And those wingers are playing Ireland-style rugby. They're playing like Mac Hansen and James Lowe. Obviously, they're different profiles of players, but they're coming off their wing. They're getting involved. They're winning contestables in the air. They're dominating, you know, impressive specimens. And, you know, the Springbok fullback, Damian Valemps, is getting bullied off the ball by these two, you know, relatively young wingers. They're not that young because they kind of have been kicking around at Munster for a while and not getting their look in until this year. But they look like they have a really good chance. I think you're right about Hodnett. I think Klein is another one who's got a real shot. It's just a really good time to make a run at the final and win a final in Cape Town against the Stormers when Ireland are playing South Africa in the pool as well. It was a really, really perfect time to do this for Munster. And like you think of the Ulster lads, just it was a terrible season to go out in the quarterfinals of the URC after a bit of a stinker of a campaign. Anyway, even Connacht got another run at it and got a chance to impress. But I think there is going to be a very healthy Munster representation in that squad when it's down tomorrow.
Yeah. Leamy rated alongside his Champions Cup or Heineken Cup wins in 06 and 08, Barry. And I think the URC has become a much better competition. And you have to put these things in context. Winning all those games away from home, winning the final in South Africa against a really good side and coming where Munster have come from, it's not just, oh, they've won the URC. I think you have to think about how they've won it, the style of play, the coaches, the way the players have played, all that sort of thrown into the mix. Where do you put this win in context?
Yeah, I agree entirely. That's what I said to the boys, my parting words of wisdom to them as I was leaving there. As I downed my last bottle, I said, lads, this is up there, like if not surpasses what Munster have won before. Because of the manner in which they've done it. And they, you know, we love that, you know. I mean, that's in the DNA of Munster, isn't it? To be written off at the start of the season, to be questions asked over the coaching ticket and what they were trying to do. So to have done it the hard way and I mean, that's unheard of. The fact that the South African teams who come into the URC is obviously changes the landscape entirely. Does make it a hell of a lot more difficult. I mean, it was far from a perfect season and they'll go back and, like, there's so many improvements that they can make as well. You know, what they've done now is they've gotten the monkey off the back and they'll get so much confidence from that. But now it's about kicking on. How can they improve the style of play? You know, it to be a little bit kind of maybe critical, like they can come a bit predictable when they get into that attacking flow that they kind of seem to be going the same way a lot of the time. They're just so, they work so hard and they're so into it and the buy-in is so incredible from the players that they get. They constantly get the ball back and they're so switched on that they make very few mistakes. But there's plenty of opportunities to evolve that game plan going down the blind side. and bringing the forwards into the game a little bit more. It's a bit obvious sometimes when they're going to be passing out the back and stuff. So I think that's what Leamy's DNA is as well. Is to, he won't be just like, yes, sit back now on our laurels and win. They're going to try and just improve, probably make another couple of signings, I would hope, over the summer with some of the cash they've gotten from winning that tournament. Maybe bulk up the front row, but maybe another 10 if, you know, Ben Healy's going. But yeah, look, it's they'll be definitely enjoying this week, but then it's got to be focused on how can we step it up and improve from here.
Yeah, and we were talking a few weeks ago about Connacht and the geographical spread they have now, lads, from Roscommon and Mayo and all sorts. And I was just looking at the team. I know this is kind of an old point about the West Cork influence, but it is kind of noticeable. Like Coombs from Skibbereen, Hodnett from Roscarbery, Crowley from Inishannon, Josh Witcherly from Bantry, plus you have like Ben Healy and Barron from Tip. Like there's, it's not this sort of Cork City, Limerick City sort of team. And I think that's a really significant thing, Barry. Leinster don't do this half enough. They don't talk about, you know, where all the players are from and kind of sell the Tadhg Furlong element to it. But for Munster, like they're starting to get players from different places than they used to.
Yeah, I think Leinster, they don't talk about it, you're right, but they have done an incredible job at throwing that net a bit wider, haven't they? And getting those kind of players in. And Munster have been, I think, pretty lucky what they've gotten with the West Cork Mafia. With just a few individuals down there, parents and coaches and clubs who have just inspired those young fellas to come through. And but I think Munster have now started realizing that's where our strength lies. You know, the AIL was kind of shunned a little bit since probably 2009, 2010. Our school system isn't as strong as the Leinster school system, so we do rely a lot on our clubs to produce players. So I think Ian Costello, his position now in Munster, and Gar Prendergast as well, they're starting to invest properly in that part of the game, because that's what we want. We want our own young players coming through, and I think winning will help that massively as well. You'll see there'll be 10,000 plus people in Thomond Park tonight to celebrate with that team, and hopefully a lot of kids can be inspired, because that's where it came from for me. That's where it came from for all these lads who play for Munster now. It's watching a Munster team playing well, winning, enjoying themselves, playing good rugby. So yeah, look, that's good to see, and it's the only way we're going to, I think, catch up with Leinster over the next few years, is to bring through that youth.
Great reporting from Cape Town, Rory. Great reporting from Craig Casey's gaff there, Barry. enjoy Toman tonight. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, lads.
What does it look like? A turtle, is it?
Yobs. There's an incredible podcast on at the moment, produced by the Second Captains.
Biggest load of bollocks. The Second Captains show in Ireland.
We're now getting to that point now where we are inspiring.
The Second Captains podcast. Pretty much we've done for the last 20 years. Be role models to kids.
Welcome to it. Hey, Pat, do you want to split?
I'm going to hazard a wild guess that some of you listening today might be in the market for a good sports documentary on the telly, perhaps. Well, allow me to point you in the direction of Kevin Moore and Codebreaker, airing on RT1 at 9:35 tonight. It tells the unique and frankly insane story of a man who was a central figure in not one but two of the greatest sporting movements in Irish history. Heffo's Dubs in the 1970s and Jackie's Army of the late 80s and early 90s. And it took him a while to let go of the whole Dubs thing, even after he joined Manchester United.
Yeah, I am. I'm keeping it from my employers because, you know, ignorance is bliss.
Kevin Moore.
At the time, we've got no internet, you know, there's no way of keeping in touch with what's happening somewhere else. You can come over and do things that people don't know anything about.
You think about it now, in the age of instant information, it's a story that could never happen today.
the final was too big a game to get away with.
Famously, Kevin Heffernan and Tony Hanahoe go over to talk to Dave Sexton about it and, you know, get formal permission.
Are you aware of his importance to the Dublin team?
Well, I am now. I wasn't a few months ago.
We were invited up to meet the manager, Dave Sexton. He asked a few questions like what was the nature of the game and would he be in any danger? And he said, no danger. And many people would be at this match. 80,000. I can see him saying, big attendance for a friendly.
We are honoured to be joined in studio by the director of this wonderful new movie, renowned filmmaker Kevin Branagan. Brano, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Owen. Does that plinky plonky noise under
track. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Were we not like slagging that off a few weeks ago?
No, I like it.
Oh, talking about
just Brooks Ken Koepka.
Let's go and pull the wool over Dave Sexton. Yeah.
That, actually, yeah, that would be perfect for what we talked about if Ken could just walk around to that theme music. I like it there. I also love the footage of Dave Sexton, the Man United manager, in a very large collar, very 70s style,
totally 70s style.
Yeah,
he seems a bit bemused as well, his face, isn't it?
Like, oh, completely.
Why are these Irish?
What is going on here? What is it about the story? Tell us. What is it about the story of a charismatic Ireland winning Gaelic footballer who moved to Manchester United and eventually played in his country's first ever World Cup that appealed to you as a filmmaker?
He's kind of like the devil in Sympathy for the Devil, isn't he? Like, he's just, or Forrest Gump maybe is a better analogy. I don't know, do you want to be compared to the devil or Forrest Gump or either?
Well, Zelig is the often used word, where he's just anywhere something amazing is happening in Irish sport for literally 15 years. Oh wait, there's Kevin Moore.
Yeah It's like Heffo's Army, Jack Charlton, and he's just in the middle of all of it. Like, he's there in Stuttgart, he's there in the game of the millennium in 77.
Alex Ferguson's Manchester United.
Alex Ferguson's United.
Briefly enough.
Yep. Sent off at an FA Cup final. It is ridiculous. It's genuinely the most outrageous sporting life that we've probably seen.
What was it like sitting around with Tony Hanahoe and Moore and Jimmy Keeve and these lads in the boozer reminiscing?
In Kavanagh's in Marino.
Is that what it was?
On a sunny day last summer. Yeah, it's great. Again, don't think they respected me as a football man, but
you got disrespected by both the GA crowd and the football crowd.
They respect each other, which came across very well, which is amazing.
You can see it's like a cliche. It's like when they seem to meet up or walk into the room together or whatever, like they just pick up where they left off in 1978 or whatever, you know, the kind of way. Like I was kind of like really kind of starstruck being around Jimmy Keaveney, you know. Like just following the Dubs or whatever, Jimmy kind of is this like figure that looms large, so it was just great to be in Jimmy's presence.
What was the sense you got from them about how they felt about Moran leaving in the middle of this Dubs glory period to go to United? Were they happy for him?
They were happy, but I think Hanahoe puts it across best. They were like, oh well, you know, we're losing a really good player here. And when you see in the footage, the thing about looking back through old archive and stuff is that you actually see like who is good and who isn't good. Like looking back to old Ireland games, I was like, I think I said this to you before, I was like, fuck, Ray Houghton.
Ray Houghton is amazing when you watch an old Ireland game back.
Unreal.
Yeah. And
especially in those like late 80s qualifier years or whatever. Just unreal. And he's the real driving force of like those Irish sides. He's like popping up everywhere. But this is not about Ray Houghton.
No.
This is about Kevin Moore. But no, Moore and... definitely good. Brian Mullins, definitely good. Keaveney, definitely good. Hickey, like there's a load of Dublin players and you're like, oh, it's not just it's not just like kick and rush or whatever. You can see this Dublin team, you know, did have something about them and did have an aura and were playing like really amazing football.
Yeah, and the 77 semi-final kind of goes down in history as, you know, you just described it there as the game of the millennium, I think. And, you know, it has this reputation. I think, to be fair, in the last couple of years, there have been, you know, the Dublin Kerry games of 13 and 14, is it? Like Dublin Mayo had, there were a couple of brilliant Ireland finals. It's maybe not recognised as like the all-time greatest game anymore, but certainly it was the apogee of that era. And I've watched it as well. And the first half is pretty poor. Like the first half is not great, but the second half is just like this riot with rules. Like there's goals flying in everywhere, like gigantic hits. It's a lot of fun to watch. But Moran does look different to a lot of the players. Like he's just his sheer athleticism.
Oh, there's some footage that Brano has of him at Manchester United in the early days and he's just peeling on his jersey or peeling it off. Yeah. The shape he's in.
Yeah.
Like, presumably without doing proper weights or anything like that back then.
Just
it's
living.
Impressive. Like, yeah.
Playing a lot of sports, but just on Moran in 77, he seems to actually have been a new type of player in that, like, he's a defender, but he's like, he goes on these massive runs. And I suppose the famous one is 76, which before I started doing the doc, I thought he had scored.
Everyone does.
He like one twos wide, with Mullins and Brogan, and Brogan gives it back and then he puts it wide. But like, it seemed that at the time that no other kind of defenders were doing
that. I mean, at the other end, there's Tim Kennelly, who's like a great center back in his own right. But what he was the rock, you know, that you that attacks founder on the 45, on your own 45 yard line. You stand there, thou shalt not pass. Midfielder comes in rampaging and you just level him, basically. Like, that was centre half back play.
You are taking your life in your hands playing the way Moran played.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you're soloing. If you're soloing, you're probably going to have to put your head down for like a split second, and that will be enough for someone to come across and elbow you in the in the temple.
And the violence in the games is like, it's pretty unbelievable.
But you have to tell yourself, they're moving a lot slower and they're not half the size of the players that they are, that as the players currently playing at top level of the of Gaelic football. But yeah, Moran was just, he did look different. He just had something that other players didn't have, and that was just raw pace, athleticism. He was a swashbuckler, you know.
Some of my favourite footage in from the soccer side of things comes from the FA Cup semi-final in 1983 against Arsenal.
And off Moran's head, he got another awful crack there in the face. Kevin Moran is in a terrible way now. He's pouring with blood.
Remember that one, the one you got carried off in the Arsenal?
As the stretcher passed the United crowd, they just gave me a massive roar and lift.
Kevin Moran keeping his thumb up to say to the others, we're nearly at Wembley.
It wasn't about, I'm okay, but hey, we're through.
You want to feel a connection between you as fans and your players. You want them to embody how you'd like to think you are on the pitch. When they come back to you like that, that's how icons are made.
A few viewers do write in and ask, why does Kevin Moran get cut so often? Is it because you're braver than other players?
I wouldn't say braver than other players. I might go for balls which aren't mine.
And so Manchester United, the club with the biggest following in the world, will be at Wembley in 5 weeks' time.
United were always a great FA Cup side, because basically that's all we was winning for a long while there. There was no league championships or what have you.
Now, who was that speaking at the end?
Manny. Gary Manny Moorfield. He does come back from like 6 weeks in some island off Croatia. He's wearing his flip-flops. He was very happy.
Oh, yeah. So cool. How is Manny to work with?
Manny's great to work with.
he's a gentleman. He was a gentleman throughout.
Big Man United fan?
He's a massive Man United fan. He said that him and his brother used to go. He used to bring my brother when I was 4 and he was 3. We'd hop on the bus. It's like, what?
4, 3, and 4. That Kevin Moore moment, he's giving the thumbs up and he's being stretchered off. Very reminiscent of Seamus Coleman this season, just a few weeks ago. I think a lot of people made that comparison.
Yeah.
When Coleman gave it that against Leicester.
And there's a bit, he collapses into like the referee's arms just before that, and it's kind of like Jesus coming down from the cross vision.
Because he's trying to keep his head back because his blood is pumping everywhere. Yeah. So he's like, I think maybe he's like, oh, I'll just, if you could just lay me down, basically, and so I can bleed onto the grass, that would be better. But he does get, like, if the arms kind of go weak, and he's like, oh man,
I suppose, like, now from, what year is this, 2023? It is kind of, you do kind of like irk a bit when you see all that head stuff everything. But yeah, you know, Kevin has turned out absolutely fine. But like, he was saying, or Robson was saying, I don't know if this is on the camera or off camera, but he was saying that basically when Kev went over, he didn't, and Kev kind of backed him up with this, he didn't really know how to head the ball. So for the first 2 seasons, he's just like, he's jumping with his arms and stuff as if he's going to catch it, you know, in Croke Park. Yeah. But he's trying to keep his arms down, and then his head is just like milling into like boots and everywhere. And then people are kind of like, what is this guy doing? And he says that he says about a lot of stuff in soccer that when he came over, he's kind of like learning. It's like, this guy's playing first team
learning
United,
at Man United,
and they're kind of like, this is how you head it, you know, this is how, you know, this is how you control it, and all. You know, it's like learning on the job. It's amazing.
Does he like that characterization of the brave warrior? I get the sense over the years that he's maybe not that mad on it, because it probably minimizes the skill level, and it makes people just think he's just this lunatic who sticks his head everywhere rather than actually a good baller.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's too into it. He hasn't leaned into it anyway, you know, like I'm psycho Moran around like that, you know, the kind of way. And then he tries to minimize. He's like, you know, the first two seasons I was at United, a lot of stitches. But after that, you know, it was kind of cut out. So, well, the facts aren't really sure. But yeah, he hasn't fully leaned into being like, you know, Psycho Kev or whatever, because, you know, he could definitely play ball too, you know.
The footage of him playing, lining out in the World Cup in 1990, he's a big part of the Charlton years, you know. And it just, I think you do a great job of bringing it back around, because I'm just thinking, it's such a crazy story. Even to go over and be a success at any sort of level in England in professional football, but to do it at Manchester United, and then to be part of this amazing journey, this, as I said, one of the great movements in Irish sport in the Jack Charlton years, playing in a quarterfinal of a World Cup. It is totally unique. You hear that story, you hear that word bandied about quite a lot, but I'm pretty sure Moran's story is unique.
And the footage of the Stadio Olimpico for the quarterfinal in particular, all of that just looked and looks amazing in the documentary.
Scalacci's goal is so bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, like, don't get me started, Brano.
But
for you, should have kept it.
You probably don't even remember it, Brano, but we remember it. Those three lads here, we remember it.
Thankfully, I don't. But he talks about being in the dressing room afterwards and just having a cold shower and just being like, oh, it's over. Like, we would have played Argentina next. And it kind of goes against your popular image of Italia 90, of like, you know, Hottie running around the Stadio Olimpico with a tricolour afterwards and everyone happy. It's like, oh no, this guy was actually a winner. And he was from one of the world's biggest clubs and he wanted to beat Italy. And so it wasn't all, because my image of Italia was like, oh, sure, we'll give it a lash, have a few pints and go. It's like, no, these are actually extreme winners in this team.
Yeah, and would have fancied it against Argentina. I mean, he played against Maradona. There's footage of Maradona playing in that famous Cup Winners' Cup match.
The Robson game, basically.
Yeah. But Moran up against Maradona as well that time.
He marked Ogie Moran and Maradona.
9:35 p.m., straight after the news, prime time slot.
I mean, it feels like I've already seen I have seen the documentary, but it seems like I've already watched it on TV, given the ceaseless promotion it's been getting over the course of the last couple of days.
Well, I've still got a few friends in there.
Not only that, Murph, but this man has taken over the Irish TV documentary space after Reds and the Heron last week.
I was about the history
of communism in Ireland on TG Car.
Yeah, I was actually training on Wednesday night, so I didn't get a chance to watch it live, but it's still very much up on the TG Car player.
It is on the TG Car player, yeah.
And it's such a brilliant story.
Terrifyingly on brand for Brano, as I think he described it last week.
Well, I mean,
a younger Brano.
A younger Brano.
Centrist now.
How much fun was that? The launch party sounded like good crack.
The launch party's great crack. There's a scene in the film where it's like black and white and it's in Liberty Hall and it's meant to be like this left unity meeting. And it's like Bernadette Devlin, Des Gerrity, people like that kind of at it. And then it ends up with everyone like chucking chairs at each other. And that's kind of how the screening in the Sugar Club a couple of weeks ago nearly ended.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah.
People, just some old grudges being settled and stuff like that.
Why was in the film, he was only in the party for 2 weeks. And then, you sit down.
Through the chair, everyone, please. Through the chair.
Ah, brilliant. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Murph.
Can I just urge everyone out there to please, please watch Codebreaker at 9:35 p.m.
tonight.
And also Reds and Heron on Aaron. What is TG? What's the player on TG Car in Irish? The Tedgel is. Listen, the TG Car player, it's still there. Don't worry, Reds and Heron.
Ken, thanks for laughing along to some of the content on this particular episode.
Thanks, Brano. Thanks, Brano.
Simon, Owen and Ken.
Thanks for listening. Jamie and Matt on the hurling tomorrow for Second Captain's World Service members. You'll also hear the episodes ad-free if you sign up now. The Second Captain's podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The Second Captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.